Good morning, it's Drew, and today we bring in someone we've talked to before, but a very important part of Tulare County, and it's Katie Meteor, the CEO of Family Services of Tulare County. And Katie, we know that the last year has been really odd and different. How are things holding up there at Family Services?
Well, thank you, Drew. Thanks for having me back again. I can't believe it's been already almost a year that we've all been dealing with COVID and just so many challenges for our community. And you know, Family Services has definitely been impacted, much like a lot of other organizations and industries. You know, we have seen, despite the, despite folks staying home, we actually have been seeing increases in the type of, situations that we're working with. So specifically domestic violence, and many folks know about Karen's House, our domestic violence shelter, and we have managed to remain operational this entire time because we understand that, you know, we really need this resource for folks in abusive situations here in Tulare County. So we've been operating this whole time. We have been super fortunate. We have a great team there, and we've only had one issue at our shelter and in terms of COVID itself. And otherwise, we've had folks, you know, remaining healthy and supported there. So we're really fortunate. One thing we kind of didn't anticipate was we knew the need would grow. I don't think we knew it would grow quite as much as it has. So we've actually been utilizing other resources to help shelter people, because unfortunately our facility is just not big enough to accommodate all the families that need housing right now, especially safe, confidential housing.
Which is very tragic and hard to imagine that in a tough time, the coronavirus, and maybe they lost their job, or maybe they're really reduced in hours, and then they have to figure out where they're going to stay because they're in an abusive relationship. Luckily, Family Services of Tulare County is there. And on a normal year, 5,000 individuals or so, about the number that you guys will see. Mm-hmm. How much more has that been in the last year?
Well, we have seen growth in some of these areas, like you mentioned Karen's House, the shelter, and some of our other projects. So I suspect we will see at least a 30% growth in the number of folks that we're serving, especially, you know, we're taking on some things that are a little bit, outside our wheelhouse at times. We've been helping with doing food distributions and, you know, testing events and outreach in new ways. So it's definitely been an interesting time in terms of connecting with folks, but they're finding us, and that's what we're happy to be here. We're happy to still be operating and here to support folks. So we're seeing the growth, and I think what we'll be seeing over the next 6 months is pretty comparable.
I was checking out the website, which is very informative. It mentions right at the top that because of COVID-19, walk-ins aren't available right now. So that's another way that it was affected, to where if someone needs help, they need to let you know so you can make an appointment.
Absolutely. So we have done that, you know, for the safety of our clients and our employees, you know, trying to limit just the face-to-face interactions wherever possible. I'm hopeful that we're going to get to come back out of this hibernation where we've been primarily, you know, providing our services remotely, but I'm really proud of our team. They, you know, moved all of these services remotely. Obviously, the shelter, that doesn't work. You can't live with people via Zoom. But right, everything else, we've really been able to accommodate remote options. We've moved all of our support groups and various things onto online platforms. So this has given us a chance to actually reach more people in some ways, because our staff aren't commuting to different parts of Tulare County. They're able to, you know, get through to more folks in a day because they're not taking that time to travel. Or in some ways, you know, it's been hard, and in other ways, it's been helpful. So we're trying to look at both sides.
When looking at the way that the internet is used for everything, you can bank online, you can order groceries online. When you sit back and you think about the difficulty of the situations that are in front of people, do you find that maybe because there's not a place for someone to just walk in, that people won't contact you because they're scared of the internet side of life kind of getting in the way?
Sure. I think that's definitely a possibility. In addition to our shelter operating in person, our rape crisis center team has continued to respond in person, especially those emergency type services. We are human services, and so, having that real human contact is a big part of what helps folks get through these types of difficulties. So we definitely want to be there. I'm hopeful that we'll be back in a place for walk-in soon. I'm so glad to see our Tulare County numbers coming down, and there's just been a lot of hard work to get us as a community, really, in a better place. So I hope that we'll be there. But I do think we've had just such great response to some of what we're able to offer online, whether it's our parenting classes or anger management, different things. People have really, I think we've all had to accept that virtual remote work is a little bit part of life right now. It's given us a great opportunity for innovation, and that's what we keep pushing for because, yes, we are all hopeful this is temporary, but man, what can we learn out of everything we've all gone through? And so we've, come up with some new ideas, like actually created an online web chat for victims of domestic violence that maybe couldn't access coming through, a phone call, which is sort of the traditional way to connect with us on that. And we've seen our numbers of contacts double because we've offered that web option.
That is such a great way that technology can be used for the positive, because you could be sitting on your phone, so you could get help just by the click of a button.
Yeah, absolutely. People can go, to our website, that fstc.net, and there's an icon right on the homepage that says chat with an advocate. And so people can just go there in English and Spanish, connect with a trained domestic violence advocate who can answer questions. I think, in our world today, like, that's the way a lot of people want to initiate a conversation, at least, especially about something as complex and sometimes hard as domestic violence is to talk about. So we've noticed, almost double the number of contacts that we're receiving in a month just by opening up that web-based chat. And then, now we're starting to offer, we're really excited about offering some new workshops for the community where we're having groups around totally new topics that we haven't done, really at a public level, like codependency or, the trauma of this year and wanting to get support on that. So if folks go to our website, they can see those offerings, and we're trying to stay creative and engaged and supporting our community with what they really need right now.
Once in-person opportunities are available, and a lot of these webinars that you're having now, will you kind of combine those and have in-person and still offer a webinar type of format?
Yes, I think that's something we've had a lot of conversations here about. And as much as, I think everyone's kind of sick of Zoom or webinars or things like that at this point, I think we're excited about how that can enhance the work that we do in person, because it is a great format for some folks. I see us going, to a much more hybrid type of opportunities in the future. More, we want to be able to offer both. And I think this was the push, whether we were ready for it or not, right?
FSTC.net is the website, and Family Services TC is the social media. The social media is half of the time it drives you insane because people are just spouting off. But the other half, it's informative, and you guys always post informative Facebook and Instagram posts. Being contacted through Facebook is another option for people if they're a little worried about calling.
Yes, absolutely. We get messages through our social media, whether it's Facebook, Instagram. We are on Twitter. We're on LinkedIn. We kind of just want to be at any platform that someone can reach out to us. And I know that hasn't always been sort of looked on, kindly in our particular field. It's, not the most formal way of communicating, but we feel like however people need to connect with us. And social media is so much a part of connecting with people, especially in this past year, that we want to make sure we're available. And our role is to help, you know, educate the community, let them know not only what we're doing, but why the issues that we're working on, why they matter, and why even if domestic violence or sexual assault or child abuse isn't impacting that one particular person or their family, you know, it is impacting their community. And when we can address it, it means a better community for everyone.
The mission of Family Services is just that, you've talked about it, helping the survivors, help there be survivors of domestic violence, mm-hmm. sexual assault, mm-hmm. human trafficking, child abuse, and homelessness. And mm-hmm. when I saw homelessness in the mission statement, it kind of made me wonder, well, mm-hmm. how does Family Services get involved in such a touchy subject? Because mm-hmm. not just local level, but state level and nationally, homelessness mm-hmm. is a huge issue right now.
Yes, and we've definitely, you know, seen how kind of a rapid rise in the number of folks that are living on the street has impacted not only that population, but the wider community. So we actually started, you know, in addition to being the shelter provider through Karen's House for many years, you know, so we've done residential work, and it's not necessarily what you don't necessarily think of a domestic violence survivor as homeless, but, you know, if someone requires shelter, it's, you know, sort of a similar idea. And so probably in about 2008, Family Services, pre-me, before I was here, you know, entered into some opportunities to provide housing for folks. And I don't know that everyone knows that we do that. So we actually own 10 transitional housing units for families impacted by domestic violence. So our goal is that once they, you know, come through Karen's House, that if they need some more support and some more time, they can actually live in our transitional housing apartments for up to 2 years. Oh. While they're in school or working. A lot of times they're doing, you know, our survivors are doing both. And, you know, with the goal that when they come out in 2 years, they're ready and feeling more prepared to be truly on their own. And so we were doing that work. And we also got involved in providing permanent supportive housing for individuals and families. So all told with transitional housing, I think we're supporting about 55 to 60 units of housing in our community right now.
And that's phenomenal, because like you said, people don't think about it like there. They think, oh, well, you help me get out of my situation, you'll put me up, but then you'll just kick me out. That's not the case at all. If you need to stick around, you're going to stay around.
Right. We want to help connect you to a longer term support, you know, and 10 units is just, frankly, just not enough, unfortunately, for what we're seeing in our community. But, you know, we've had a role in that work for a while, and I think it's just become such a very visible and present issue in our community. So our hope is, you know, to keep working with our partners, our city jurisdictions and the county, to see what other types of solutions we can come up with, because, you know, there's a big need here. There just really is. We, unfortunately, Tulare County is, I think, third or fourth in the country of communities of our size in terms of unsheltered homelessness. So those are folks that are actually physically out on the street, not in a place, you know, meant for humans to habitate. So we've got a lot of work to do, but we're just happy to do our part.
When handling the cases when it comes to homeless, do you see a common denominator with a lot of those folks? I mean, is there one specific reason of abuse or some sort like that really resonates with all of the or majority of the individuals?
You know, I have to steal something that a friend of mine named Adrienne Hillman, who's starting a group called Salt and Light, which is going to be another amazing, they're doing amazing work here in Tulare County. But, you know, I've learned so much from her, and I think what we see is a unifying factor across all these types of cases is just really this catastrophic loss of family or support systems that people encounter in their life, and it ultimately ends up, you know, with them on the street. And I don't think it's hard for us that have never been there to truly grasp the trauma, I think, that comes with living on the street. It doesn't take very long for folks if they're, you know, trying to survive, you know, in a campground or, you know, behind bushes. It's your body and your brain goes into survival mode. And so for a lot of folks, they may have co-occurring issues, but if we're not meeting their basic physical and emotional needs, then we're not going to get real far because it's, you can't even function like that. So I think not having the support systems, like I know if something happened to me, I would go to my family, you know, and I've got a fortunate to have a stable and loving family. But what happens to folks that don't have that or don't have a system of friends for whatever reason that could step in and support them? So I think for us, that's what we're seeing. And one of the things we're seeing that I think is new in our community is we are really seeing a big explosion of families that are experiencing homelessness. I know we've got the eviction moratorium right now, but that won't last forever. And it doesn't mean the money is not due eventually. So we're seeing a lot of families in their vehicles that they're much less visible to our community, but they are there. And it's been really a hard year for that.
When you mention family and family support, mm-hmm. you go back to teenagers that maybe there's mm-hmm. some sort of physical abuse or sexual abuse mm-hmm. or mental abuse, mm-hmm. and all they can do because it's someone they trust is run, and all of a mm-hmm. sudden we have homeless teens that are on the run because mm-hmm. of, you know, this abuse that's happening at home.
Right.
And
right.
and sometimes that abuse maybe isn't the parents or in the house, but it's mm-hmm. someone they're dating or someone they're seeing mm-hmm. that's causing mm-hmm. this horrible situation on a person. And February is Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month, and 1 in 3 teens experience some sort of dating violence, which could mm-hmm. eventually lead to homelessness. And there are multiple levels of the dating violence. And can we talk just mm-hmm. a little bit about the different varieties and the different mm-hmm. causes and effects of each?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So we see, you know, dating violence amongst teenagers very similarly to what we see in adult relationships. And when we're looking at, you know, first-time experiences of violence, oftentimes it's happening and starting for a survivor actually even in their teens. So the most, I think the age range that we see that first time experience is like 16 to 24. That is the biggest population, especially women, that we're seeing experience violence for the first time from an intimate partner. And it's 1 in 3 teenagers. And I think we don't talk about that enough. And, you know, parents don't necessarily know what they should be looking for. Physical abuse, of course, is pretty obvious and straightforward if there are injuries or things like that. But there's other types of dating violence, just like we see in domestic violence, whether it's, you know, sexual violence, which can be even something like coercing your partner into doing things that they're not prepared to do, or denying them things like contraception, emotional and mental abuse, the verbal abuse that can come, we're seeing just very extreme levels of that, even in teenage relationships that we're helping those folks navigate. I think technology, we cannot understate what technology has done in terms of opening our teenagers up to kind of constant contact or constant communication from their partner. And so helping teenagers learn what is a normal expectation. Is it normal or healthy, I should say, for your partner to text you 100 times a day,
right,
even when they know you're supposed to be in class? You know, is that a respectful boundary? Is that, you know, that can be a sign of something more controlling to come. So we do definitely see very similar things for teenagers as we do adults. But, you know, how discussing that with your teenager is really hard. It's really complicated and uncomfortable because we're not always that great about talking about healthy relationships. It's easy to talk about stuff that isn't good and point that out. But as we know, teenagers don't always listen to when we point out risks of things.
Right. You know? And mm-hmm. one thing that I always think on too is when a parent of a young female should definitely sit down and say, well, here's what, you know, here's kind of mm-hmm. what you need to be on the lookout for. But then the mm-hmm. parents of a young boy need to do the exact mm-hmm. same thing of, you know, treat them right, you know, and, mm-hmm. and that's where it all really starts is at home.
Absolutely. You know, and getting to talk to your kids about boundaries and what's comfortable for them. You know, sometimes we just assume that someone knows, like, oh, well, this is my limit, or this is what I will and won't accept. But especially with teenagers, they don't necessarily have kind of conscious conversations with themselves about that. So that's our role as, you know, trusted adults is to surface that with them and say, you know, not just wait for something to get bad, but to say, like, okay, you're now of an age where you're going to be dating. So let's talk about, like, what do you want in a relationship? Like, what, you know, is what are your limits? What are your boundaries? And how can I support you in that? I just think those are conversations we don't have until sometimes it's already ventured into a place that's not safe.
I kind of feel that in a lot of situations too, especially with the awkward moments with your parents, you know, you never mm-hmm. want to think about your parents in that light. But mm-hmm. so you turn to movies like American Pie, or you switch to movies like that where it's those aren't normal situations.
Right.
You know, right. I mean, those are Hollywood situations that are glorified right. and blown up mm-hmm. a little.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think we have to really, you know, use those moments as opportunities to talk to our youth, because there's a lot that happens in the media, you know, whether it's movies or television or that is unhealthy, you know, if you look at it standing back and objectively, but we don't remember that our kids are watching that and that they don't have the same, you know, life experience and sort of even developmentally, they're not in a place where they can understand, like, oh, that's not healthy, you know, or that's not a safe decision. It sort of gets interpreted as like, oh, that's what it means to be in a relationship. And so we have to point those things out, especially as our kids are developing and starting to be interested in dating and things like that.
You mentioned the texting and constant social mm-hmm. media updates and mm-hmm. You know, constant interaction. When I was a kid, and I don't want to date myself, but I will to talk on the phone once mm-hmm. a day was really a great thing. We didn't have the option of, oh, I'm going to FaceTime my boyfriend or girlfriend, mm-hmm. or I'm going to message them. So having all of this access to ways of communication, that is another discussion that needs to be had.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I just think we have to be really conscious about these types of issues and willing to, you know, walk into our discomfort in terms of talking about them, because if we don't frame these issues for the youth that we care about or other adults that we care about, if we don't, you know, set the example of what healthy relationships look like and demonstrate a willingness to even have those conversations, then, you know, that is why we see generational violence. That's why we see, you know, kids that have been exposed to domestic violence much more likely to end up in a domestic violence situation, either as a perpetrator or someone, you know, being harmed. So we have to sort of grapple with our discomfort and be willing to put ourselves out there and say to our youth, like, hey, I care about you. I care about, you know, the quality of your relationships, and I want to be here to help navigate it.
If a mother or father who maybe has experience with sexual or physical or emotional abuse don't really know how to talk to their kids about this, a perfect opportunity would be for them to reach out to Family Services of Tulare County, and you guys could actually lead them into the conversations, right?
Absolutely. We, our hotline, you know, our domestic violence or rape crisis hotline is not solely for someone who's experienced abuse. It can most definitely be a resource for family members or friends that are concerned about a teenager or an adult that they care about being in a dangerous situation, and we can help talk them through some strategies for, you know, broaching those subjects, and being prepared with resources, because that can help make the difference about whether you're willing to engage in a conversation or not. If you feel like you don't know what to do, if someone tells you, yes, I am in a bad situation, and then you feel like, oh, I don't even know what to do about that, let us, you know, that's our role. We can help you, you know, think that through. And the same goes for our chat hotline. Even if someone's not the direct survivor themselves, they're more than welcome to ask us questions. And then we are, you know, like we were talking about webinars, we're hosting another webinar for parents this coming February 24th, actually. And we're going to be talking about exactly what we've been talking about today, how to approach your youth, how to, you know, engage with them, and where to start in terms of what should they expect as a healthy relationship, or what should they be looking for on the flip side of what could be red flags.
When you start talking, I mean, obviously the birds and the bees conversation is something that parents have at an early age or an earlier age. At what age would you recommend a mother or father talking about dating?
Wow. Yeah. And I think sometimes folks, you know, we bind together this idea of like, okay, it's the birds and the bees conversation and the dating conversation all in one. It's really not. I mean, there's things that young kids need to understand, of course, about their biology and you know, reproduction, all that good stuff. But, you know, we rarely think about talking about the actual, emotional relationship part. and I think that's the part we sometimes miss, because it's not all physical. There are, you know, things that we need to know when we enter into a relationship emotionally with someone to protect ourselves, the same way we would need to know that information about how to physically protect ourselves in a situation. So I know for me and my kiddos, we've been talking about elements of healthy relationships, not so much dating, but elements of, you know, what is a healthy relationship since they were really little.
No mother like wants to have teacher. To have that talk with their kids, right?
No, not necessarily. But, you know, we, to keep it developmentally and age appropriate, you know, like with my little one, when she was three, you know, we were talking about consent, not necessarily in that word, but, you know, me teaching her about your body is your space, and how do you let people know what you are and aren't comfortable with in any kind of touch. I know there's been a lot online I've seen about, you know, forcing kids to hug a family member, you know, when they're leaving, you know, a gathering or something. And, you know, we don't want to do that with kids. We want kids to feel autonomous and in control of their body and their decisions, and, you know, knowing how to talk about what their limits are. And those things can start really young, even without making it about romantic relationships.
If you're concerned at all, I recommend that you go to the website and check out this webinar, which is coming up on the 24th. Go to fstc.net, register to be part of that so that you can learn. And Katie, very quickly here, we have just a couple of minutes left. With COVID restrictions, there are lots of changes at Family Services. We've talked about that. But volunteering donations, how is this working now?
So, of course, we are always in need of monetary donations. Specifically, we've been encouraging folks, if they can give financially, we're trying to have a small pool of funds available for motel vouchers and things like that if we've got an emergency situation and we don't have capacity at Karen's house. So that's an opportunity. We are still having volunteers support us. One of the things, if someone's interested in working directly with survivors, they can get some training from us and even do things like the web chat from home. You know, there are ways where we're looking for ways to support, you know, allow people to volunteer that are safe. And actually we just had our last virtual volunteer info night, but we do that every month. We have an awesome volunteer coordinator named Lorene. So connect with us and we can find you a place to serve the community that feels comfortable and safe even during the pandemic.
I recommend go and donate if you can. Again, the website of fstc.net, and make sure you get them and follow them on Facebook, Instagram, and all the social media, Family Services TC. Katie, it's always a great time to talk to you, and we need to get the word out as much as possible.
Yes, thank you, Drew. We really appreciate the opportunity to spread the word, and we are here. We're still operating, and we hope people will connect with us if they need us.